My name is Nikki Strong. This is VOA 1 The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Dan Friedel. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Today on the program, you will hear stories from John Russell and Gregory Stockel. John reports on a DNA discovery that helps us understand what Greenland was like 2 million years ago. Greg's story is about poverty in Lebanon. After that, Andrew Smith and Katie Weaver have the Higher Education Report. Be sure to keep listening for my conversation with Andrew about how technology companies are supporting high-tech education. Then, Ana Mateo tells us about a rocky English expression in words and their stories. And now, here's John Russell.
Scientists discovered the oldest known DNA and used it to study what life was like 2 million years ago in Greenland. Today, northern Greenland is an empty, cold area. But in the past, it was full of trees, plants, and animals. Kurt Kjær of the University of Copenhagen was the study's lead writer. He said the research opens the door into a past that has basically been lost. For the study, researchers examined environmental DNA, also known as eDNA, from soil samples. eDNA is the genetic material that organisms put into their surroundings, including hair and waste. The problem with ancient DNA is that the genetic material breaks down over time, leaving scientists with very small pieces to study. But, with the latest technology, Eska Willerslev of the University of Cambridge said researchers were able to get genetic information out of the small, damaged pieces of DNA. In the study, which appeared recently in the publication Nature, researchers compared the DNA to that of different species, looking for matches. The samples came from an area in Peary Land, which is now a cold, empty place. But millions of years ago, the area went through a time of strong climate change that sent temperatures way up, Willerslev said. Soil and rocks likely built up for tens of thousands of years in the area before the climate cooled and locked the DNA into permafrost. The cold environment helped save the small pieces of DNA until scientists came along and took the samples out, beginning in 2006. The researchers said when average temperatures were 11 to 19 degrees Celsius higher than today, the area had an unusual number of plant and animal life. And pieces of DNA suggest a mix of Arctic plants with ones that usually grow in warmer climates. The DNA also showed the presence of animals including geese, hares, reindeer, and lemmings. Previously, a dung beetle and some hare remains had been the only signs of animal life in the area, Willerslev said. The researchers said one big surprise was finding DNA from the mastodon, an ancient species that looked like a mix between an elephant and a mammoth. Mastodon DNA remains have been previously found in forests in North America, a long way away from Greenland. I wouldn't have, in a million years, expected to find mastodons in northern Greenland, said Lova Dalen. Dalen, who was not involved in the study, is a researcher at Stockholm University. DNA samples also suggest the presence of horseshoe crabs and green algae in the area. Kjær explained that nearby waters were likely much warmer back then. Laura Epp, who was not involved in the study, is an eDNA expert at Germany's University of Konstanz. She said with the available data, it is hard to say for sure whether these species lived side by side, or if the DNA was mixed together with different parts of the landscape. But Epp said this kind of DNA research is valuable to show hidden diversity in ancient landscapes. Willerslev believes that because these plants and animals survived during a time of extreme climate change, their DNA could offer a genetic roadmap to help us deal with current warming. Stockholm University's Dalen expects ancient DNA research to keep pushing deeper into the past. I wouldn't be surprised if you can go at least one or perhaps a few million years further back, assuming you can find the right samples, Dalen said. I'm John Russell.
Lebanon is a former middle-income country, one that is neither rich nor poor. But its financial system collapsed in 2019. The collapse led to a great drop in the value of the Lebanese pound. And the United Nations says that event has led 4 out of 5 Lebanese people to become poor. State services have broken down. Financial support to reduce the costs of goods has been removed. And tens of thousands of Lebanese have left the country, seeking jobs in other countries. It is the biggest emigration wave since the 1975 to 1990 civil war. Lebanese political leaders admitted that the crisis was the result of many years of wasteful spending and corruption. And the World Bank called the crisis a deliberate depression created by those with political and financial power. Now, economists say it will deepen if politicians delay passing reforms agreed with the International Monetary Fund, or IMF, in April. The passing of these reforms is required to unlock billions of dollars in aid. However, public pressure for reform has largely passed. The pressure was at its highest during the 2019 protests and after the August 2020 Beirut explosion. The political parties that have ruled for much of recent history still won the greatest number of seats in May's parliamentary elections. Mohamed Shamsedin is a policy expert at Beirut-based Information International. He said, "The Lebanese people accept and become used to all the economic, political, and security conditions." He noted that many now live on aid, and the few $100 their relatives working in other countries send back home each month, called remittances. The flow has increased as some 200,000 people have emigrated since 2019, he said. Meanwhile, basic state functions are increasingly supported by international aid, sent to prevent total state failure. The World Food Program alone supports a third of the country's 6 million people with food and money aid. Hospitals, schooling, and even security services are increasingly financially supported by international aid. The economy has become a two-tier system. Those with money are known as the fresh dollar class. They eat at restaurants or send their children to the best schools. And those who earn in the local Lebanese pound only have enough for simple needs. One such Lebanese is Hussein Hamadeh. The 51-year-old is unemployed and unable to support his family of four. His two daughters studied in the light that came through a window at their unlit one-bedroom home. Hamadeh said, "I have a very pessimistic view of the future. I take each day as it comes. There is no future for me." A study by Gallup released last December found that some 63% of Lebanese said they would leave the country if they could. I'm Gregory Stockel.
Niti Anand Gangidi came from India to the United States to study chemical engineering. But when the COVID-19 pandemic created difficulties for her doctoral studies, she changed direction by studying artificial intelligence, or AI, at Houston Community College, HCC, in Texas. At HCC, Gangidi and a team of students worked on a difficult problem: finding ways to help keep people safe in dangerous situations, such as school shootings. Their solution used AI to develop an autonomous vehicle to enter areas that are too dangerous for people. Gangidi's team won a National Innovation Award for their project at Intel's Global Impact Festival in San Jose, California, this year. Gangidi is one of thousands of students involved in partnerships between large technology companies and community colleges in the U.S. Companies such as Dell Technologies, Intel, Google, and Amazon have developed special training programs for students. Some areas of study include artificial intelligence, data science, and user experience design. Community colleges offer 2-year associate degrees in many technical and liberal arts subjects.
The use of AI, also called machine learning, is growing. AI helps computer systems do things which in the past only human beings could do, such as identify faces. AI is commonly used in work which uses lots of data, such as banking, supplying materials and products, and healthcare. But now, other areas, such as natural language processing, also use the technology. AI is even used in artistic work, such as music composition. A 2021 study found that 43% of businesses reported increased use of AI in the last year. However, 39% of leaders at those companies said lack of workers with AI training was a barrier to using the technology. Dell Technologies has partnered with Intel to help pay for the Artificial Intelligence Incubator Network. The network has given $40,000 grants to 10 community colleges to help build AI laboratories. Adrian Garber is a senior strategist for higher education at Dell Technologies. She told VOA Learning English that the AI for Workforce program gives students practical training. Carlos Contreras is the director of Intel's AI for Workforce program. He noted that the program includes training in ethics, making it different from other kinds of technology training. The AI training asks students to think about when it is right or wrong to use machine learning and how people should use it. Contreras explained that students need to know how to define the problem they are working on, identify and classify the data sets they need to put into the AI computer models, and then run the models.
And then all of a sudden, I have a trained model for my process for the problem I'm trying to solve.
Garber of Dell Technologies noted that each community college can choose how it wants to use the AI for Workforce program. Instead of having one curriculum for all colleges, the program can be changed to serve the needs of each community.
And they're figuring out where in their academic pathways does this content fit. So it might be a certificate program, it might be an associate's degree, in some cases it's a full bachelor's degree, and it is a very responsive learning content package.
Niti Anand Ganjadi explained to VOA Learning English some of the details of AI training at Houston Community College. Students first learn to analyze and organize information. Python is the software commonly used and is a starting point for classes in basic data science.
And it is very easy for any individual from any country to learn about this. You have lots of videos on that. Just install it, download it. That's all you need. You need access. Start exploring.
Ganjadi said knowledge of statistics is helpful for working with data, but that students usually do not need high-level mathematics, such as calculus. For the class Introduction to Machine Learning, Ganjadi learned how to build models to deal with a larger amount of data. She said tools from Amazon Web Services, NVIDIA, and software such as Jupyter Notebook help students work with data faster and at a higher level. HCC gave her a real data project to work on to help her use the AI training. Ganjadi said that working on a real project helps students gain experience, which employers value. Ganjadi says students should put their effort into their passion or strong interests rather than being concerned about the name of the university they choose to attend in the U.S.
Doesn't matter if you're from Stanford or Harvard or from community college. It all depends upon each individual.
She was interested in HCC because It gave her the opportunity to work in teams on real problems, use innovation, and gain leadership experience. She added that community colleges cost less to attend than four-year universities. In Texas, international students can also qualify for in-state tuition, the amount that someone living in the state pays to attend. This, along with scholarships, reduced her tuition costs from about $12,000 per semester to about $2,000 per semester. In addition to Nityanand's team, another team of students at HCC won a global award at this year's Global Impact Festival. The team used AI to develop an autonomous drone to enter dangerous places. Ganjidi thinks there are many job opportunities for people who learn to work with data. She said, if you know how to handle data, and if you have a passion, anything in AI, how to handle, analyze these data, and make a good story of the data, that's easy. You can land up in an AI job in any big company over there. I'm Andrew Smith.
And I'm Katie Weaver.
I'm Dan Friedel, and you're listening to the Learning English Broadcast. We are joined on the program now by Andrew Smith. You just heard Andrew's story about the Artificial Intelligence Study Program at a community college in Houston, Texas. Welcome to the show, Andrew.
It's always a pleasure to talk with you, Dan. Happy to be here.
Andrew, your story told us about Dell and Intel partnering with community colleges for AI training. Can you tell us about other tech companies' partnerships?
Yes, there is a lot going on these days. So Google offers trainings they call career certificates in four areas of information technology training. And Google has made these freely available to community colleges. And also, Amazon Web Services has partnered with community colleges to offer training in cloud computing and artificial intelligence. Neeti, the student at Houston Community College, she told me that for her more advanced AI classes, she used Amazon Web Services programs a lot to help her work with all the data.
Andrew, that makes sense that the high-tech companies would be looking for a way to increase the number of skilled workers. Speaking of Neeti, can you tell us what comes next for her as we head into 2023?
Sure. Neeti graduates this December, and she wants to start working for a top AI company early next year. She has already had some job interviews. And long term, she said she would like to run her own business one day.
Thanks, Andrew. It is nice to hear a story about a student overcoming a problem and finding success.
You're welcome, Dan. Glad to help.
And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. On this program, we explore words and expressions in the English language. We give examples and notes on usage. Some things in life change easily and often. They are fluid. They change and move as fluids do, easily. When we are planning events or establishing rules and policies, sometimes it is good to keep things fluid or changeable. But some things are not easily moved or changed. They are fixed or inflexible. To describe these inflexible things, we can say they are set in stone. Things that are set in stone are very difficult or impossible to change. We can say that permanent rules, laws, and policies are set in stone. It often takes several difficult actions to change them. The dates of some events are also set in stone. For example, weddings take a lot of planning. Some people even start planning for their wedding a year or more ahead of time. You simply cannot tell friends and family that your wedding will happen sometime in June. You must find a space for the ceremony. You need to invite people and find out how many are coming. You need to decide on food, music, and flowers. And you must have money to pay workers to do different things. So setting a wedding date in stone is the best way to make sure the wedding happens smoothly. Setting the date in stone means it cannot change, or at least changes would cause problems for people and possibly cost you a lot of money. We also use this expression with two other verbs, carve and write. So you can say something is carved in stone or something is written in stone. The meaning stays the same. On the other hand, if a rule, date, or event could be changed easily, we can say it is penciled in. If you pencil something in, you are admitting that it is not set in stone. It may change and may be erased. When using this expression, however, you do not need to really use a pencil. So when we say something is not carved, set, or written in stone, we mean it can be changed. For example, many workers were upset by some new office rules. So the supervisor said, "If they don't work, we can always change them." In other words, the rules are not carved in stone. Before we end the program, here is one more example for set in stone. The editor used it when he sent back my edited story. He gave some changes, but added, "These are just suggestions. They are not set in stone." It's good to have an editor with a sense of humor. And that's the end of this Words and Their Stories. Until next time, I'm Anna Mateo.
Thank you, Anna. And that's the Learning English broadcast for today. Thank you for listening. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Dan Friedell.